Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're all in the room to learn about the new office. I'll introduce myself. I'm Brian Shires, Senior Product Manager. I'm based in Redmond, sitting in good old Building 2, right outside of Lake Bill. Beautiful scenery in Redmond. Happy to be here. I'll be here for the next this session and the following session. So urge you to stick around for the second session as well. This session, we're going to give you a flyby of what are some of the cool features in the new office, and then we'll talk about why we call it the new office as well, not Office 2013, how we think about that. So we'll go ahead and get into this. I'll be mainly demo for this first session. The second session, I'll get much more deep into how we think of deploying Office as a service, and that's the new client deployed as a service. A little bit more about myself. I spend my days thinking about Office 365 deployment. How do we think of identity? How do we think of mail migration? And ultimately, how do we think of delivering the Office client as a service as well? So let's go ahead and get started. Thanks for everybody's attendance on the Friday afternoon. So to get ourselves started, kind of put you in the mindset of like where we're coming from and what we were building the new office to address. And if you think about this, it was a big change from when we released Office 2010 to the new release of Office 2013 and the new Office 365. And ultimately, you're probably very aware of these things. You know, it's the surge in mobile, like hitting a billion devices well ahead of any production or a lot of the predictions that were out there. So certainly, we wanted to be able to address Office and productivity across a range of devices. So form factors, and we'll use a couple different devices here and show you that working a little bit. But ultimately, those are key fundamental things from us that we strive to deliver on in the new office. Also, if you think about where we're coming from and the workforce that we're addressing, it's a multi-generational workforce. And we see this as new folks coming to the workforce that have a different way of expecting to work. But we also have the lots of people staying in the workforce longer. They have a set way of working, so we have to make sure that when we introduce changes, we do that in a mindful way, and that we do that both of giving people flexibility, but also helping them make transitions and making those things go smoothly, so that we don't upset productivity, but don't hold ourselves back from delivering features. And obviously, the other big investment and concern is how does Office fit in the cloud? And Office 365 obviously was the first major step in this. Office was included in the first release of Office 365. But in this release, we actually we'll spend a lot of time today talking about how we make Office, the client, itself part of that service, and how we enable all those services to work together. If we go back to even the 2010 days, with all the services together, that actually makes Office work and the productivity work the way it was designed to work. That we don't have a standalone client anymore. Everything's interconnected, and so cloud really helps us deliver on that, both from an IT perspective. Hey, I have a whole range of things that I know I'm going to have, that everybody's going to be able to use all the features. And from a developer perspective, when I build an app, I can have expectations of this is actually what the landscape looks like. So it's not like each and every environment turns out to be different, but rather one set of expectations you can have around what a customer environment looks like because they're working in Office 365 or working in the cloud. And productivity, so we'll spend some time looking at this today, but it's all about having the ability to have the right tools on all the devices you have. But it's not just giving you a set of apps. It's making sure those apps then are connected to those enterprise-grade services. So how do we deliver a great app experience, Office experience, but also back that up and provide the features that we can in the service itself? So we'll take a look at this kind of by themes. And the first is devices. And first and foremost, how many of you are using the new Office, Office 2013 or Office Pro Plus? Just a quick pulse. Yeah, about half of you, it looks like. So that's great. Glad you're using it. If you haven't started using it, in the next hour, we'll show you some of the cool things to entice you to to come forward with us and show you some ways that you can easily get started. But you know, the interface you're gonna find there is, you know, definitely went back to the drawing board and said, how do we streamline things? How do we get the focus to be on the content? How do we make it easier for users to interact with the content and not get hung up on the Chrome or the treatment we do in the applications themselves? And a lot of that is, you know, we have different devices and they have wildly different resolutions and limited screen space I might be working with. So have to get very smart about how we use that limited screen space. And then ultimately, you know, building and launching some of the first touch-optimized Windows 8 apps. So OneNote and Link are the two that are published today. So we'll look at a couple of those. But, you know, taking it to the next level, yes, we've made, and we'll take a look at using touch on a desktop device or on a touch-enabled device, even on the desktop apps. There was investments there. But then taking it to the next level is the true Windows 8 immersive apps and serving the first and foremost the way we expect people to interact with a tablet-like device. OneNote had to be the top of that list, because that's exactly what it's designed for, being able to take notes on the fly. And then, you know, we're not just talking PCs. I got a lot of Windows devices up here, but from an office group perspective, being mindful that we need to be cross-platform supportive. And so we started that journey in Office 2010 with web apps being very much we can address lots of different platforms. And we've brought iOS and Android apps for select applications out along the way. And we'll continue to invest in those components as appropriate. Other big area, and this kind of speaks to that multi-generational workforce, is there's a lot of desire to bring social type interactions into productivity applications. So things you're used to seeing in news feeds, and of course, acquisition of Yammer, big investments there to make that happen. But it's making that really pervasive, and not saying like I have to go to a site necessarily to do those things, but making the idea of conversational type of interactions happen kind of naturally. And an example we'll look at today is even the way we do comment markup in Word and PowerPoint, making that more of a conversational thing, allowing you to branch off into an appropriate level of communications and keep track of where things are at. And of course, continuing to invest in Link and multi-party HD, and now with acquisition of Skype, starting to allow integration with Skype from Link, with more coming on that in the future. But those two, really powerful communication platforms coming together. From a cloud perspective, obviously 365 is our mainstream approach to delivering Office and all these services to you. Continue to offer them from an on-premises, on your terms approach. But the core investment here is how do we make cloud a first class way of delivering it and consuming all of our services. And one of the big things that we had feedback from the initial 365 launch or 2010 era was, hey, that you put Office in there, you change the subscription model, but I'm still delivering it the old way, and it still comes with all of its hassles of deploying it and all those things. So a big investment in this is landing Office truly as a service, so both on demand and as a click-to-run package. That's what the next hour will go deep into, how we actually deliver that, how that's actually architected. But think of it this way: it's Office stream to you, kind of like I'm streaming a movie, I just want to get it, I can easily get that down. We also have now done the work. We did investments in AppV in the past. Now we can actually allow ourselves to have Office being isolated. But we'd have been smart, started to allow integration with the local apps, so you're not stuck in a little siloed or sandbox world. With the cloud, it's also very important to think of, hey, that's great. You say you want folks to use 365, but all my, in a good example of this, is all my SharePoint apps or all my add-ins, man, those aren't in the cloud, and I still have all this local stuff. So the new Office introduces a new app model for Office and SharePoint. And think of that as it's truly a cloud app model where My app itself runs, is agnostic. We don't really care where it runs. It can run on SharePoint, can run somewhere in the cloud, can run on your own on-premises servers. But think of it as putting a browser interface with JavaScript APIs into the Office documents, into SharePoint. So enabling that from an app model and giving you a cloud-based approach to actually extend and build apps for Office. And of course, from a cloud perspective, we can never lose sight of continue to invest in our security standards, security policies, also making investments here. It naturally fits us into control. How do we then not only make sure our data centers are secure, control, regulation, compliance, but then to help you actually take control of those things and have your own governance and policies in place. So we did an investment around a program called Prodiance. That's now made available to do detailed spreadsheet and access file analysis. Lots of investments here around data loss prevention. There was just a Forrester research study that came out this week that it said 91% of customers or of organizations mark data security as top or critical priority. And this fits right into that. How do we make sure that we can, through kind of the natural interface people are working in, make sure that people are mindful of, hey, be careful what you're doing with that data. Most people are not doing this intentionally. How do we actually stop those employee or contractor-driven kind of oops moments from happening and just make them aware without causing a loss in productivity? And then ultimately, continue to invest from a 365 perspective in one consistent UI across all the different services. Used to be, you'd have to know how to navigate your way around a SharePoint management or a change management console or Office 365 service specific things. Those are all now into one management console. They all have one consistent look and feel. It feels natural to work among those. So how do we make this actually package it up and deliver it to you as one consistent package? And if you have questions along the way, let me know. We'll answer them as best we can. Hopefully save a little time at the end. We'll spend quite a bit of time here just going through lots of things, what I can do in Office, and give a kind of soup to nuts demo for you. So let me start over here and kind of reset the expectation of what we're going to go through. So I'm now Katie. I'll put my wig on, I guess. So you're going to go through the scenario, kind of day in the life of a user using the new Office and kind of how they kind of work with it, what they can do with it. And we'll interact with another user here and show you working on, this is actually a Surface Pro, so show you kind of the interactions and how it can take advantage of those devices. This device is also a touch device, so we'll occasionally do a little touch for you and show you how that works in the scenarios as well. So like all of us probably do, we start our day most typically checking in on mail. So as Outlook loads up here, the first thing you're going to notice is really that fast, clean down, simplified UI. There's less Chrome, much more focus on the content that's available. And the resolution we have here, there's not a ton of screen real estate. So first thing you'll notice is by default the ribbon is being hidden. It's not gone, right? It's still readily available to me. If I have a bigger screen, I can pin that down. I can continue to work as I'm used to. But it's there and it's smart and stays out of the way when I need to. The point of touch controls, you can see here I have an icon that's popped up right now. Realizes I'm using mouse mode, but if I were in some other situation where it wasn't good for me to be typing now, I can switch to touch mode since this device has both. And if you watch actually what happened there, all the icons have now actually, I think I can pop down the ribbon, it's just more apparent there that the icons get a little bigger, much more finger-friendly, easier for you. The text, the messages themselves split out a little bit easier, making it easier for you to be able to target. So while it's not a Windows 8 touch immersive app, we're actually taking those investments. If I have these type hybrid devices, I can actually service myself quite well in either mode that I'm working in. So for screen resolution purposes, I'll go ahead and go back to mouse mode for now. So a few things to start looking at here. One of the things you can see is I just arrow over different males I have, things are going to light up. Right, and this idea of being able to take quick actions. I shouldn't have to open a mail, open another window, and then decide to take an action. This is a classic case of, hey, some noise, someone sent me some message. I just want it to be gone. I don't have to open it. I just get this quick action and delete. I didn't have to futz with it. So super simple stuff, but helping you, helping improve the flow of where you're going. So look at a few other examples here. And here's a mail. Oh, I actually need to respond to this. High priority mail. Ask me, hey, did they send in my expenses? Let me show you another improvement is the idea of inline replies. So rather than always popping out a separate window, at the end of the day, you've probably all done this, you go to shut down, and like, wow, there's a whole list of crazy old windows floating that you've forgotten about from earlier in the day. So as I start this, I did not mean to pop it out, and I did. Let's go back. So as I start typing here, if you notice over in the original mail, it's actually put in an indicator there showing that there is a draft. So even if I navigate off of this and I get, oh, what was that voicemail from? I still have a visual indicator that, oh, yeah, you were still in the midst of doing that reply. I can easily come back to it, pops back right where I was, and I hit send, and I'm done. So that's a nice indicator. We all get distracted, get a phone call, have to run and get a coffee or something. I come back, and I have, I have a nice indicator of where I was last at. That cool? That's, I know, from my perspective, a nice little feature of, I don't have to wait till the end of the day to be reminded, like, oh, no wonder they're yelling at me. I forgot to send that mail from hours ago. I'm going to take another look at, I made mention of the new app model. And the app model is going to show up in most of the new Office applications, and they're very context specific. And at first glance, you're going to go, what's he talking about? There's not really much new here. It looks like a mail. Let's go and make it full screen. A mail from Katie's manager asking her to meet. That's great. There's actually action to be taken here, but we didn't actually read it, didn't really pay attention closely. You notice this new app bar is being exposed here, and the apps for Outlook are being triggered based on the content that is in the message. So in this case, Robin had made a note about, hey, let's meet. And as you can see here, based on that string, it was able to interpret, hey, she wants to meet Monday at 9 a.m., and the app is actually going to make a suggestion that you probably ought to schedule a meeting for that, because that's your manager. Excuse me. So I can go ahead and take action on that. I just immediately click here. It's already got Robin populated for me, right time, and I can go ahead and send this off. So a nice way for you to go from a text string, hey, especially if you think of this in a longer mail, maybe in the middle of the paragraph you scanned over, there was actually a call to I want to meet or I want to do this. You think of many different scenarios. This is just one example app. But to help you be made aware of when there's action or to-dos to be taken care of. So let's not bother with that rest of that. So very cool feature there. The other thing you can do, in this case, Katie had actually, or Robin had actually put an address in, and apologies, the screen resolution, should pop it down. There's an address down here that's driving this, so it picked up on this address. Back in Redmond, she's asking to meet near my office. Hey, let's meet. So this is great. I get an email, maybe not a work mail, but maybe a personal mail, same type of thing. I shouldn't have to copy that address and go somewhere else to look for it. I can immediately go here, and this isn't just a picture, right? This is live Bing map application being surfaced in here. So I'm actually. Think of it as like an iframe for a web browser, but actually having the ability to interface with the content that is there in Office. And that's being done through a JavaScript API. So from how I develop it, go check out new app model on MSDN if you're a developer. Great easy way to get started with these types of things. You can take an online service and be able to pull that together with an Office application pretty quickly. Because this is whatever I want to expose in the service, I can do those different things. So in this case, I can get directions. I can do whatever I want. So it's up to you of how advanced you want to do here. Other one we're firing is LinkedIn. But let's just show you kind of where those come from. If I go back to this file in Outlook, or the backstage, as we often call it in Office, there's a new component here. Oh, it's actually because I have the mail open. I can't do it from there. From Core Outlook Backstage, we now make a new top-level item here of Manage Apps Available. If I click on that, what it actually does is takes me to my OWA interface, and this is an Office 365. So where this is all being fired from the back-end Exchange server is our Office 365 service, which GA'd a couple weeks ago. You can see here that this user has been provided some standard out-of-the-box apps, but you can see some of these were installed by user. So user can actually go add their own. Of course, with group policy, I can go turn that off. So if I'm an administrator and don't want to let that happen, we can actually set group policy and allow people to make essentially project workflows to say, hey, I'm interested in this app, suggest it to IT to purchase. So you have different ways of managing those. And to do this, they just simply click out, and they're actually going out to, why is it not loading? Here we are. That's just being slow, we hope. I'll show you one a little bit later in Excel, where I know it will load properly. But the users could simply go out and shop and add for more. It's because I actually clicked the wrong thing, so thank you. They can go out and redirect is temporarily going somewhere else. Not my region. Okay. So we'll come back to that, but the user can actually navigate out to the Office App Store, select the app they want, and pull that in and install it in. And you'll look at the ability to do this both here. We can also do this in Excel and Word project, to name a few. These same apps actually work. One of the key advancements is making apps that don't work just in a thick client. But this same app, if I navigate, the same app is going to work on web apps as well. So if I go to OWA, the same functionality is going to exist. Same functionality exists if I use this cross-platform. So if I go access OWA on my iPad, I get these same apps. So I don't have to write a new app for each and every platform. I write the app for the Office platform, and everywhere the Office platform can go, these apps then get to go. So very powerful. We had a lot of requests in the past, like, hey, it's great you're doing web apps. We used to have the add-in model, and didn't really facilitate this. So this was, not only is it making persistent for the cloud, but actually making an app model that works truly across all the platforms that Office goes to. Since we're here in the backstage, one thing I want to note is, hey, look, Office 365, I get a huge mailbox. I get up to 25 gigs. I work with now a lot of devices that's almost all the usable space that the thing might have. It's going to become more important to think about how much mail am I caching. We're probably most of us working with everything cached, or our full OST is cached locally. Because you get newer devices with limited amount of space, it's going to be important for you to be able to have an easy way to control how much stuff I pull down. If I go into my account settings here, new feature here, I pick that mail email account, and if I come into the settings for it, see here, I now have this nice little slider that says, oh, how much data do you actually want to keep? So I'm using cache, and I want to have some cache, but do I really want to keep a whole year? Maybe I only want to keep 3 months. Rest of it doesn't mean it's not gone away, right? It's still on the Exchange server in the service, so it's still there. But this gives you a nice, easy way for you to be able to control this. And of course, group policy objects, we can start managing these controls as well. But knowing, a lot of these devices are going to probably be unmanaged, some guidance you can give of, hey, here's how to avoid filling your device with your ginormous mailbox that you've nicely been provisioned to in the cloud. So important little thing to think about as we start servicing all these different device types. They all have their own set of expectations and ways that we need to work with them. So we've probably done enough mail for now. Let's do a little bit more mail. But we all live this life where you get too many attachments. Probably the whole reason my mailbox is growing out of control. So we've done some things here to help you make it easier for users to think about kind of doing the right action. How do we get users to avoid, you know, continually attaching different versions of the document? Ultimately, we'd love for that to get in SharePoint or wherever it may be that you want to put your thing. So Office 365 introduces the idea of a concept of a site mailbox. And so I've already created a site mailbox, and that's actually, once I created the mailbox, I've said, hey, Katie is one of the members of that site mailbox. Just like if I were added another account, it automatically is added to my profile, and now I have a Northwind Traders site mailbox. So if I actually open that up, I can get mail to it. That's not a big surprise. I think we just have the welcome mail that's in there right now. But another important piece here is it's not just a mailbox. We needed a way to actually pull together content. So if we think of it working on a project, there's mails, there's communications, and there's lots of documents that I want everybody in that site to have ready access to. So ultimately behind this list of documents is actually a SharePoint site document library that's been created. And that's actually where these documents are stored, but they're proposed or surfaced to me here through Outlook. So if I go back to my original mail, and Alex had worked up a proposal, sent it to me, well, that's great, he sent it to me, but really the whole team should be aware of that. It has to be, you know, there's a couple things that are done here, like maybe in the old world I'd have to save that local or go through a couple steps to get it there. Now I'm just going to take that document, drag it over onto Documents. If I go look at Documents, you can see there, that's now uploading, and that's all I need to do. So I've solved my problem. It's published out there. Everybody, yeah, it's a tragic moment. ta-da! So as it's uploading, now everybody who's part of this site mailbox has access to that content. I didn't have to re-forward that out and bloat everybody's inbox up. So a very elegant way being made aware, making it available to everyone. And now that it's on a SharePoint site, we're all going to work on one version. We're going to get rid of the version control issues and the madness that we often cause. So another element of this is, you know, it's not just documents, right? I can also take those mails, and if I shift and drag down here, I'll have the option to move that right down to the mailbox as well. This is great. You know, oftentimes we get people just adding to distribution lists. That's well and good, all the new mail they have access to, but they always say, well, where was the old mail that only the prior members had? This is nice because once I add somebody to a site mailbox, they have access to the whole history, and so they get kind of all the project history that might go with this. And I can choose to clone my, make a copy over here, or I can just purely move it over and only have one copy in my mailbox. So great way to share, make sure those communications going to one central location, people come and go. The data is not lost on, you know, individual users, OST or PST, never be found again. So you like Outlook? Good, I hope. So let's do some real work today. Let's go back. Let's fire up Word. So first thing I'm going to talk about Word, and this is going to be across all the Office apps. So they all have a new welcome screen here. So when I launch, we did a lot of research that I looked at this, and what do people actually do? We used to just launch you into a blank document and say, hey, you decide what you did to do. What people are usually doing is going back to pick up where they were last at, working on a prior document, or creating something new, and they often want a template to work from. And the list of templates you can see here on the site are out of the box templates from online. I can also create custom ones for my organization and publish them here. I talk a little bit about use one of these templates as a way to show you. This is even the way we're offering some of the get started training for the new Office app. So if you think of having target people to get started with Word, well, welcome to Word. If I just open this guy up, it's going to be a nice little Word document that actually shows me. Here's some of the features you can do, leads you through a scenario to discover some of the new things I can do with Word. So, to the point of, helping people make that transition, like exposing this content right up front and making this available to them kind of naturally in the product, not having to go search somewhere else for it. So let's close this. We don't want to actually just work on that. Oh, I didn't mean to totally close Word. Let's reopen it. The other thing I want to point out here is, look, I'm actually signed into Office. That's totally different, right? We didn't used to do that. It used to be I'd sign in when I went to SharePoint, but now I'm actually signed into Office. And there's a few things that are going on here. So Office Pro Plus, with Office as a Service, is now it's user-based activation. And we actually provide you 5 active installations per user, so and that's for Pro Plus. Same essentially true for the consumer scenario as well for the home and business. For each and every user, they get 5 installs. So Katie can go onto this machine, onto Surface device, onto a home machine, even onto a Mac. So we're actually a cross-platform. I buy an Office 365 Pro Plus license. And it covers me kind of everywhere I go, all my devices, up to 5 active installations. The next hour, we'll go deep into how that works and what you can do with that. The other thing it's done is actually roamed this set of recent files here, this list of files. If I go to a different PC, if I go home, or I go onto my tablet device, I'd want to continue working what I was working on. That list is actually roamed out on that profile. So it's actually going to the 365 service. When I sign back in, this list of links, I'm not taking the documents themselves, but at least the pointers of, hey, here's where you're last at, actually go with me. The little Chrome treatment up here, that customization, custom dictionaries, those things all roam with that user, so I don't have to reset these things up in each and every PC I go to. So I'm going to open a document I'd been previously working on. So, demigods are not nice today. Let's open this one. I see. So I'm going to open this up. An additional thing that's roaming with me is when I'm in a document, if you saw it just flash up there, it'll come back to it, is, hey, recommendation that you might want to pick up where you last left off. So again, from a Chrome perspective, keeping it focused on the content that's in, always still having access to the things I'm working on. I can simply click on this, and it remembers, hey, you were last down here on page 9. Let's just take you there so you don't have to remember where you're at. For a long document, that can be very nice for you. Don't have to use it. Other important feature here is the ability of making revisions and markups much easier to work with and manage. So we have this idea of a simple markup, and this is going to think of it as a red line. There's some stuff here. In the past, this might have been all kinds of bold font changes. I don't really need to see that. I just need to know that somebody changed something here, and I can expand that and take a look at it, or and just choose to leave it collapsed. The other important piece here is the investments we've done around the commenting system. So I made mention this before. How do we actually make these things more conversational? So in the past, you'd have to do a comment and then put it under a comment in the side and try to remember if they actually were linked together. Now I can actually just come in and actually reply to this and say, so Robin's suggesting we have a table to insert here, so I will get it done, right? Perfect. Now I save this back. Robin's going to be able to see those comments, and they're going to be linked and tied together, so that there's not an issue for them to worry about. So what she's actually asking me to do is insert a table from something I think we have floating in an old PDF. So let's actually go try to tackle that task. So I'm going to open Acrobat. I'm going to open this file I just have at my fingertips here. But she's actually talking about something like this, right? I have this table. Switch to Slack tool, and I could, I want this, but it's in PDF, and I have no idea where the original version was, or maybe it was created in this. I can do this. I can copy this and see what kind of results I'd get. Is going to be frustrating at best, right? If you lose all your formatting, that's going to take a lot of time just to recreate and not really get a lot of valuable work done. So Office 2013 or Word 2013 enables the ability to not only open PDF documents, but to actually open them and reflow them into a workable Word document. So I'm actually going to say open, and here I have it on my desktop. And so it's going to tell me, hey, I'm going to open this into an editable Word document, give you a disclaimer. That may not be 100%, depending on how graphic intensive it is, but tables, structured content, it actually can do very well at, which is a thing you're probably looking for. If it's just an image, I'd probably just snip it out anyway. What you notice here is like this is a full-blown Word document now, and I can take this content my manager was asking about. I can copy that out. Perfect. I paste that in. It's just a standard Word table. And it's not just an image. I can actually come in and see, hey, this behaves just like a normal table. So it's actually turned that into a proper DocX Office document formatted table. So I can change formats, do whatever I want to it. So not just taking images. So really great ability for you to have that flexibility and control. So let's go ahead and save this guy up. See? So we can save that up. I'm going to switch over for a moment. I could do, link out of here. Things are being a bit slow. And let Robin know to take a look at it. So let's switch over to the other device for a moment. All right. Make the switch. Okay. So Robin actually happened to be, we'll try doing that again. It didn't actually sync the updates. Here we go. So we're actually, Katie and now Robin, we're hanging out in the same document. So, like we had in 2010, I have the ability to do co-authoring. Co-authoring, just a quick note on that, it's expanded to work on the web apps as well. So I used to be in the past Word, only worked in the client. Now Word works in the client and the web app, same for PowerPoint. Making that more ubiquitous across the board. And again, I can see that kind of thing because I could have an indicator down here that shows me, hey, they're both users are working on this. On this device, one way I'm going to probably be better at reviewing and looking at content, there's a new mode we've implemented called a read mode. And this is thinking about how can we reflow content in a reader application in Word that actually fits this type of device. So what it's going to do is get smart about how do I actually reflow. It's not a piece of paper anymore. How do I fit the screen? So it's going to actually be smart about how it's reflowing this information. If I'm on a plane reading this, it's really cool that I can just simply be in tablet mode, flipped over, scrolling through, taking a look at this, and I come to charts something. Oop. Ah. A small graphic like this, I can double click on it, and it's going to have a built-in zoom it capability for you. Very easy for you to work with. So an important investment here of servicing across all the devices and form factors that you're going to have. So. One thing I want to spend some time on here on this device is spending a moment on OneNote. And I'm purposely typing this in so you can say, yes, I have two OneNotes. So yes, OneNote desktop application ships and is delivered with Office 365 Pro Plus. But on the Windows 8 marketplace or store, I have OneNote immersive app. And so, again, the on this form factor, first thing you're going to notice here is the first thing I see is my content. That's the most important thing it's exposing to me. Now, I quickly have Windows 8 gestures here, and I can get back, and I can see all my notebooks. It's perfect, and you can see kind of where I'm at in the flow. So I'm in my Northwind notebook in a project background in history, but I don't need to see that all the time. I kind of have a context now. I can be quite happy just looking at that, or I could choose to just turn part of that on. Another important piece here is I'm on a touch and inking device. The way I interact with it is not the same way that I'm going to, I don't want to use a mouse and a keyboard all the time. So what I'm actually going to do is come in and actually select some text and just do it here with my touch. So I've just scrolled across there. You can see I picked that title. What you notice over in the right-hand side of your screen is a little text indicator, an icon for an A. So it's saying, hey, you've selected text. There's probably something you want to do with it. So this is the contextual radial menu. So when I pop that open, what it's going to do is say, hey, you have text selected. How do I actually enable commands, the whole plethora of things you might see in a ribbon, in a nice, small, little touch-friendly way? And so that's what the radial menu is about. So if I first wanted to say, oh, first, that's the title. We should actually make that font size a little bigger. I'm gonna click on font size, and I'm just going to speedometer style scroll that up. Voila, I'm up and going. So that's pretty cool. And the same kind of thing, maybe I want to change the color of that. I can drop in, keep drilling in, find the colors I want. Yep, there we go, perfect. Maybe I'll come back and make that bold. So very cool way of working with this control, purposely built. Hey, it's a touch device. These are the types of things I can do. And as I come in and say, well, I can do lots of different things, and I happen to, click down into an open area. What are the things I'm going to do? I'm going to, click. Well, there's nothing. I want to give me option to insert. I want to insert a table. I want to insert something. Let's actually do a picture of everybody in the room since we're being recorded. All right, that's perfect. Was it something like that? Say, all right, we can stick that in. All right, so maybe we want to crop out. We'll just do. We'll avoid any incriminating evidence here. That you were here at the session. We'll do chairs. We'll be safe. All right. And then, from this perspective, this device supports inking. This is great, very powerful. And if you have a chance to play with one of these pro tablets, I really suggest you do. The way it writes is perfect. Where are the people? My manager is going to wonder if I was just presenting to myself or what. But you have all the ability to do these things. It's a great way to quickly take notes. Actually, use this as a true note-taking device. So this device with OneNote Windows 8 app is a really great experience. Other thing I'm going to note is this other big investment on OneNote. We were at the sessions last couple days ago in Belgium, and the other big they were complaining about that's syncing up to SharePoint or syncing up to SkyDrive is often slow. And there's big investments in the Wave 15 release on the syncing protocol. So you're going to find that the ability for this thing to sync up is happening real time. You're going to have a much better experience than what you've seen in the past. So really great way to be able to work with these different devices. While I'm here, let's go back to our page list. And I should go back to notebooks and show you one of the things we're in here. Something else you can do from the desktop apps. There's a few features that actually are Delta, but on the desktop app, I actually have the ability to insert. We could always do tables, right? But you input a table, something like I did up here in the top, and now I'd actually like to have some functions. I'd like to do some charting or something with that. So I really want the power of Excel in here. So I now have the ability to do that, to embed an Excel chart in here, a sheet in here. So I actually have that. And I actually want to open this up. And you can actually open it up and edit and work on that. So think of it as it's actually the embedded Excel chart inside of it. There's a question back there.
Yes, that shortcut when you push together?
Yes.
Is that also in Word?
For?
Might be in Office Word.
Oh, to embed a Excel like that?
Yes.
You can insert an object. It's a different approach. So this is actually, think of... it actually creates a separate Excel file. Let's actually go back to other device here. I'll just give you a first-hand experience of that. This would be easier for me to do it over here. So actually, let's just do a new one. And so you can get, if I go insert, and actually you'll have same support for Visio, but we can do this. Do I want a new, or do I want an existing spreadsheet? So I can pull that either existing or a new thing in. And what sets this up when I enter onto this, it's actually going to open my editing experience is actually into Excel. So it's a little different than you would do necessarily in Word, because Word, you probably want it as a final presentation. So you're going to insert, you can paste it in and link the object is probably the better approach in Word. This is meant to be this more ad hoc, less polished approach. So we're going to expose the raw factor that, hey, this is an Excel thing, use Pop It Open. But when I save this, it's putting the Excel file inside the OneNote package, so they're kind of permanently linked together. Does that make sense? But yeah, and thanks for getting me here. That you can do the same with Visio as well, which is perfect because we often, you know, took my pen and I sketched out some basic little flowchart in OneNote, but I can actually go back and say, well, I want to embed in a more rich Visio diagram. I can do that same experience on Visio as well. So, enough of Word. Katie's going to be working on a presentation for later that requires some information about customers. So, where's my data application most predominantly used is going to be good old Excel. So let's launch Excel. And again, you saw there quickly that same welcome screen menu. Same thing carried across. I'm going to show you just a handful of the new features in here. One that's kind of fun, and I'd say a lot of the features I would sum up in Excel are really about helping you expose the power that Excel always had. And how do we make sure that, you can, make sure that users are actually taking advantage of those things and making it easier to work with. Like, the feature I'm going to show you is called Flash Fill right now. And yeah, I could do these things if I knew the right split or concatenate functions, but most users aren't going to know how to do that. So here's an example I have probably pulled out of SAP, a list of exported data, where a bunch of data is actually kind of munged together here. And what I really want is to have a separate column for my sales rep. So I just type out, like, yeah, John, and this is probably what some of your users might do, is they'd go type each and every one of these. And see what happened here. I started typing the second entry, and Excel went, hey, I see the pattern you're doing here. You're pulling those names out, and it's proposed down the list. Yeah, is that what you wanted? Yeah, I just hit enter. Yeah, voila, I'm done. I didn't have to do anything else. So that's a very slick way of being smart about, hey, this is what you want to do. We can do that again. But it actually gets a little smarter than that. Watch here. If I do the second column and it's looking for the category, it's actually figured out, based on where the dashes are at, that even it's not just looking for spaces in this case. Digital marketing is an example. It's a two-word category, and it's still able to pull that out. Question?
So if you change the name John,
pardon me?
Name, B.
If I change John to event?
No, B.
Oh. You'd have to refire it. There's a command. Hey, putting me on the spot here. If you go back to data, you'd have to come back to FlashFill and refire it because it wouldn't. It didn't set up a formula, but rather, it did sort of a one on ad hoc on the fly formula. But I can go refire it through this mechanism. And it's not just a one way thing. So I can actually put data together. So maybe I was a different system that required just a different input, and I wanted something basic like this. And of course, I could do this, but you know, and other approaches, but just showing you it works both ways. I can pull things apart, I can put them together, kind of reformat. Very simple, just type a couple times, probably a lot faster than, you know, doing my memory bank of what the Excel functions are that would allow me to do this, some of those things. The other thing I'm going to show very quickly, I'm going to select some data, and we found, one of the frustrating bits was people didn't really use or didn't know that there are a lot of things that could do with data. So I simply did a selection, and when I do a selection of data, Excel's now going to pop up this quick analysis lens. Quick analysis lens, if I click on that, shows me, hey, here's the things you might want to do with that data. So it's all very contextual. It allows me kind of like the no fear ability to see, that's what data bars are. That's what color scale looks like. I haven't committed to it. I haven't clicked on it. But it's actually letting people get a real quick view of what it looks like without having to carry out the action, without being afraid of how to undo that stuff. Similar for charts. So we actually come in and it's actually going to, you know, preview my actual chart to make suggestion based on the type of content we have here. So we're easy way for them to include those. Totals, tables, do tables because, hey, the black art of creating pivot tables sort of it's not a black art anymore. The system just says, oh, you want a pivot table? We'll create it for you. So as simple as that, yep, that's exactly the view I wanted. I don't have to go understand how to create pivot tables anymore. It's actually, you know, it is a recipe-driven approach, so we can actually program that and make that happen. So very, very cool way for you to expose and get people, give them the ability to answer their own questions a little bit more easily. Quickly go across a chart here and show you same type of contextual controls. I just select the chart, and now I have the ability to change that chart by simply clicking on it. I don't have to, you know, figure out where to navigate to. So it's exposing all those things. Oops, sorry, clicked off of it. But you know, it gives you a quick view of that. I know we're running short in time. The other big investment here, how many of you ever heard of Power Pivot in the 2010 era? So it was an add-in to do BI reporting in the 2010 release. But it was, think of it as very, very raw power, you know, ultimate equity reporting in Excel. The other investment now is to say there's a new feature called Power View, which actually allows me to create very rich visualizations of that massive data. So you notice here, like, it's not a normal Excel sheet, right? Actually, we've already built this up. It's powered by this Power Pivot data we've created or connected already. So if I'll go to Manage, it's going to give you a quick view of where that's coming from. So you've actually imported this from an external database. It can come from different external sources. So this one has not a ton of records, but you know, from a sales data, something in the order of 30K rows and products 20K rows. But you know, Power Pivot has the ability to go to very large data sets. But what I'm going to spend the time on is and give you a glimpse of is I can build these really beautiful kind of visualizations. Very smart. I hover over it, it shows me the details. I actually can click on these things so they're I can directly interact with it. So you can see there I clicked on cameras and camcorders and it just filtered all the data down to that. Let's go ahead and unfilter that. I can actually pop open. Boy, this plot chart is kind of crazy. I need to make it a little bigger. I can pop that out. The first thing you can see here, we can build up different, you know, filters and columns. One thing we need to add is the new idea of having a play axis. So I want to see and kind of expose, let the data tell a story. How does it play out over time? So I can actually add that and get it to map this out over time. So I create a series of charts for me. And I can go add additional filters. So pretty easy if you're an Excel person to come in Power View. And let's turn on filter area as well. Let's give you another example. Let's look at all fields and go to products and let's make brand an additional filter element. And maybe I just want to our great Microsoft Fabricam brand. And you know, I can quickly answer the questions I have. And so a really powerful way for you to interact with this data, doing a lot of self-service BI, user-driven BI capabilities with this. So one person to set this up and very easy to work and slice and dice this data without the fear of what am I doing in a data source? It's actually out here in a very safe place for the user. Okay? So quick view of Excel. That's just kind of a touch of some of the rich stuff that's in Excel. I'm going to go to PowerPoint for just a couple minutes. How many of you live your days in PowerPoint? Probably more than you want. So let's look at a few of the things here. First thing I'm going to point out is just, first thing you should be aware is we've made the investment, we made the switch. The default layout is 16:9. So all of our screens are going there. More and more of the projection systems you get to 16:9. So we're going to help you make that switch. So by default, it's going to start you there. All the templates are going to help you get started there. So that's something to be aware of, kind of mainstreaming that approach. Other thing I'm going to do is you just start a presentation mode. So there's actually been investments here around helping you be a better presenter. So I'm actually going to turn on presenter view, and we'll swap back and forth what I can do here. So we'll start off. Let's switch that to automatic. So I had actually played with this prior to not use presenter mode for our first presentation, but by default, this is the mode it's going to be in. And what this is doing is kind of taking out the, on average, it took, typical teams, 5 to 7 minutes to set up for a presentation. They go in a conference room, like, futz around, like, what mode do I need to set Windows to? So there's work done here with both Office and Windows to actually allow PowerPoint to look and say, hey, is there an external monitor attached? If so, that's where we really want to project. Put presentation mode over here in the primary device and just set it up for them. They're done. For those novices who always thought that was a bit scary, not sure what buttons to push, PowerPoint's taking care of that for them. Then the investments beyond that are helping you be a better presenter. And I'm actually going to show you over there. I clicked the wrong button. Did I get you? No. Sorry, I need to restart that quickly. Helping you be a better presenter, the first thing I should say is don't click the wrong button, Brian. So we're gonna actually, they have the ability to swap presenter and view slideshow. So if we did get it wrong, there's just a quick button you can see up there where I can actually swap that back under display settings. But you can see here we have a lot of nice controls that give you the ability to control and see what's coming next. My notes are over here. I have to drive a remote here. So I actually can rescale this. So if I wanted to focus on the notes, I can do that. I also have the ability to do a really cool thing, which is a tile view. And a tile view is what the presenter sees. So if I swap back to, what's being projected in the monitor, in the presentation monitor, still stuck at the one slide. So if, say, I get a question from you and they go, oh, what about this topic? Oh, you just read my mind. I can jump 5 slides ahead. Audience is never aware that wasn't actually the original flow. Have that rich capability to do those things. Let's come back out of that. If I can drive remotely here. Let's actually just end our slideshow. The other things, additional options to support inking, markup kind of while you're doing these presentations, which is important. Let's switch this back to make it easier for me to drive. But you notice when I have all these touch devices now, it becomes much more natural to, while you're presenting, to mark things up and like there's something that needs to go there. She should be pinching something, not the sun. Whatever you want to mark up. When I actually get done, it actually gives me the option to actually save those annotations together with the presentation. So not just a here and gone type of situation. And I can have different controls and take advantage of these. We'll see how this works. You can also use the pinch to zoom capabilities in here, so you can see their eyes zooming out, or I can zoom in very closely, just pinch to zoom. So all the touch controls, I'm on all these devices, I can do those things in presenting. What was the quick view of that piece of code that's on a slide or something? That gives you a nice quick way of being able to do that. Okay? So a quick view of PowerPoint, a lot more features. The other big investments of note are going to help you be better at building professional quality slides, so things that invested to help you to resize and be mindful of where things are positioned in slides. So here's the point of it. Let's go ahead and discard those changes. Just give you a quick view of one of those features in action. So we've all had this. Like, I have a list of icons, and I need to be able to make sure they all match up. You can see here I get this nice little guides showing me, hey, everything is equidistant. It's all lined up. You're good to go. I don't have to spend time nudging things around. That's done, you know, with a super small size, and I was still able to get that pretty close. But if you can zoom in, all those little visual indicators are going to pop up there and show you, yep, things are equidistant apart. You're great. Lock it in, and you're good. So really nice way to help you save time building more professional quality results. So let's spend just a moment on SharePoint. I'm running a wee bit short in time here. So I'm going to go to a SharePoint site. So this is Office 365. Team site we've already set up, done a little bit of customization to show you some of the stuff that's included in here. So this idea of, you know, I have a news feed, I have Yammer, but it's also, you know, making that those news feeds be kind of contextual and relevant. So you can see here directly in this team site, I have great things going on, people chatting, having a conversation. I also have the ability to not just, you know, being able to do that type of information, but I should actually be, I'm not just following people, but in work world, I actually want to follow documents and know when things are updated. So I have the ability to directly follow those documents. It's going to keep me posted, keep up to date on all that information. So some very powerful things you can do here. The other important piece I'll show you, hopefully you've all heard of this, is SkyDrive Pro. So think of it as SkyDrive for the consumer world, but SkyDrive Pro for my commercial enterprise world. So ability to have a SharePoint-based SkyDrive experience. So it's great. It's taken me to what used to be a My Site, My Library. You can see the documents I've already uploaded. But what we all want is ability to easily interact with those. And I actually have the ability to, I've already done this, but I just set up a sync. Say everything here, I actually want it to be synced. I've already done that, so it just confirms, yep, we already set that up for you. And show me my files. So these are actually being replicated onto my local PC. And when I want to add files to this, I simply just drag and drop files in and out of here. If you were watching when we were in Word or some of those other applications, important thing to call back is where it actually suggests I save things to. You can see here, by default, it's helping me be better about saving to cloud. So the primary thing that's going to suggest your users to go to are actually to those SkyDrive accounts, so helping them link to those. If I'm actually in Windows Explorer, you're going to see we actually created that SkyDrive Pro as a favorite here, so I can always readily get back to it. So important level of integration happening at the Windows level, and then a default save location level for your users. So let's do one other thing here. Let's spend a moment on Link. We have a few minutes left. So Link 2013 desktop is what I'm on. That's actually what I'm going to show you on these two devices that we have to use today. Let me get this one woken up. Great interface here to be able to work with. Robin is currently offline because I let her go to sleep over here. Let's log back in. Prop ourselves up. Once Robin's back online, I'll have the ability to easily communicate with him. I have the idea of a contact card, or I can directly interact with that person. So we're gonna type the right password over here. One moment. Okay, so she should come back online in a second. I hope. Let's sign back in. apologize for the delay. So other things while Robin is getting signed in, you notice a few other things. You know, once I have all my actions I can take here. A cool thing on video. I want to check my makeup before I actually start my video call. Make sure I don't have something ridiculous going on. Actually, you know, it shows you a preview of what's about to be displayed to everyone before you actually start that. And then when I start get connected and actually want to share programs, I can share desktop, I can share programs, whatever I need to do. Seems that we have a Wi-Fi issue going on there, so we may not actually be able to connect here in a second. But we'll see if that comes back alive. So you get the point here of I can present. I'm going to show you one other cool feature. Hopefully things are working by the time we get back to this. If I'm actually in an IM conversation, oftentimes that's kind of how things start. I start IMing, have a discussion about something. Hey, let me show you this. It used to be I'd go back to, I'd be in Link, and then I'd have to go figure out where the file was and upload it. It was sort of a pain. It's much more natural to say, well, I'm actually in PowerPoint, and I actually want to share this thing out in Link. So I actually now have an option from Slideshow to say, present in a Link meeting, which I would join if Wi-Fi would pay attention here. So you have to trust me on this one. When I click on this, what it's going to show me is an active, here's an inactive conversation, so it knows I'm trying to talk to her. I think it's going to upload it while out. Yeah, she's not actually online, so it's going to be an interesting thing. But actually, it takes that active document that I'm working on. I don't have to worry about where it's saved. It's going to upload that up to Link and be able to share that out, interactive, that I didn't have to worry about, oh, where is it saved, and go with the right version. It's just much more natural flow for you. So there it goes. I'm only projecting myself. We won't cut over to the other machine because we don't have the ability right now. And the user, the speaker can turn these on for themselves, and you just navigate the consumer, the other attendees, actually turn on thumbnails and jump ahead, take a look around, and always come back if they want to. There's a question up here.
Is it possible for participants to download a copy of the presentation?
No. You can't enable that. The default action for that would be to actually then have it shared back onto SharePoint and then to the link out. I can see where you're going to that. If you're doing a public presentation, it doesn't have that ability. You do, however, have the ability, if you wanted to transfer that out, you can actually do an attachment and send it out on a meeting as well. But not kind of like old live meeting style or something like that. Okay? We have just a few minutes left. I want to go back to... that's a whirlwind tour of a lot of the things I can do in Office 365. Didn't have time to show you data loss prevention and a few other things, but other investments really around the security area. The next hour we'll go deep into kind of what I'll give you a preview of here. Let's jump... right up to this. Shift. So with this, as you got to see the client on just a couple different devices, but Office as a Service, I highlighted this, but I'm signing as a user, we're servicing you across all your devices. So when I license it, I license it for a user. And that user can use it up to 5 PC or Mac devices. So it's going to show up everywhere. So in this case, we're showing Katie here, the cloud in the middle, and she's reaching out on all those devices. And the default save location, back to that point of, it's really important that if you're going to use all these devices, it's really important you get that data off the hard drive, off that device specific thing. So we're going to help drive that behavior. And we've been asked questions at different events in the past, like, hey, how can we disable that? We want people to stop storing it their local device. We want to have it in a secure managed location. So Office itself helps drive that behavior. Still have the flexibility to come back to that, but will help drive the right kind of user behavior. And of course, not only Office as a Service from a client perspective, additional thing we should really be showing you here is, hey, there's other cross-platform devices. I still have great improvements in the Office web apps, and I can take those, you know, across browser devices, across you know, physical hardware devices. Those are going to provide a really nice, rich experience. If you haven't checked out the new OWA, definitely want to check that out, and it's going to be a great way for you to reach kind of all different device form factors. This is also, you know, we're giving you a service, so yeah, we want to just kind of level set for those of you who don't stick around the next hour. Like, when I say it's streamed as a service, we're still giving IT plenty of controls for this. So Office is streamed as a service, but it's still controlled with group policy. So I still have over 2,000 group policy settings I can apply for all managed devices. I can apply group policy, lock things down, turn features off, do all that good stuff that I might want to do. We've also implemented a new feature of Office called Office Telemetry. Never really given you anything like this in the past. Office Telemetry is enabled to allow you to see both where and what Office is installed, what users are actually using Office for, what document types, but also then how are things working? Like, we'll actually have the ability, the telemetry will actually tell us, hey, they opened, you know, this one document or on this one device type, Word keeps crashing. You'll actually have insights to that and help you to be able to take action and work on those things. So both as a upgrade tool to help you understand, hey, these are things I ought to test before I move and go beyond pilot, but also, you know, how do I manage it going forward? If you think of the service itself, keeping you updated, this is going to be an important piece to help you have a better kind of warm fuzzy about, hey, there are things continuing to work. And talked about, you know, it's streamed from a service, but we actually still give you the ability to do scaled deployments, meaning I can take that Pro Plus, that Office client that's delivered as a service, and put it, we'll give you a way to package that and put it into your own system center or Windows imaging or third-party tool to actually do those deployments. So it's not just a portal or online perspective. So we just have about 3 minutes left. Any questions? Glad to answer. Thank you for your time today. I'll be around here, and we'll be around next hour. Next hour, we'll go very deep into how we actually architected the Office client service. How does it actually work? What are all the bits and bytes that are moving? And then how do you take it and put that into that managed client install approach? And then how do you manage it going forward? A little bit of view of the telemetry data. Question. Yeah, just the question was, are macros, VBA, and VSTO all still supported? The short answer is yes, they're all still supported. There is a new app model, which we gave a quick glimpse of. The old the existing app model continues to be fully supported. So VBA, VSTO are supported. Telemetry is actually going to be very helpful on those things. You know, it'll tell us where there's files with VBA or VSTO, where they might be having issues. So actually, you know, it'll report that information back to us centrally. And as a developer perspective, there's telemetry dashboard, which is the IT view across the organization. From a developer perspective, there is a telemetry log in each and every Office installation. I think of it as an event viewer for Office. You'll have the ability to go see my individual kind of debugging set of information. Hey, here's all the add-ins that it loaded. Here's how long it took to load. Here's the file that crashed, and in the cases where we're actually making references to object model changes that we know about that we could document, we'll track those. So we have a list of a few hundred issue tracking events, as we refer to them, and if any of those are recognized as object model calls that they're getting called, we'll event those up, and those actually are both in the telemetry log and then ultimately in the telemetry dashboard. So it's an important piece. Yeah, so the question is there a difference between Office Professional Plus 2013 versus Office 365 Pro Plus? This all works the same, right? When I actually get the file, when I open it, the Office I'm using is on my local PC. We just have a different way of getting it there now, but it will work. So VSTO, VBA, they're all good. Question over there.
You were talking about cross-platform. Mm-hmm.
So So we do have Select apps in the market store or the app store for Apple, the OneNote and Link clients. The answer for cross-platform is actually the web apps. So that from that perspective, we give you a way to work with them. They are on the web apps. And that's where it's important from an Office 365 perspective. Go out to office365.com, set up your own new trial. A lot of investments there. I didn't spend time on it today from, you know, what do those look and feel like. But you'll have certainly a web experience available to support iPad or Android device. I can't speculate on that, but they continue to get richer all the time, and we'll continue to look at the best way to fit the scenarios you're talking about. All right, any time? I think we're out of time here, so give me a few minutes to reset. So thanks, guys.